This is the Bible Answers program, which is a frank and earnest discussion of Bible truths. Today's subject is a world in transition. The hope for the future of the human race is as bright as the promises of God. Acquainted with some people who are really frightened at the events they see taking place in the world. They believe that they are living in the last days, as they term it. That is, the last days of this earth's existence. Now, I can't believe that. But first, this program is presented by the Dawn Bible Students Association, publishers of the Dawn magazine, in cooperation with many Bible student classes, and by the friends of Frank and Ernest everywhere. And now, Ed, my first question. What relationship has the time of the end spoken of in the Bible with the end of time?
Really, Russell, none at all. The prophetic time of the end is merely a transition period between Satan's reign of sin and death and the kingdom of Christ. It is only when we take this prophecy entirely out of its setting and apply it to something which the prophet never intended that we can get from it the idea that it refers to the end of time. As a matter of fact, Russell, we're already living in the foretold time of the end, and yet time itself still goes on.
I'll admit, Ed, that we are living in a very outstanding period in human history. But what makes you conclude that the present is what the prophet foretold as the time of the end?
The prophet Daniel described the time of the end as a period in which many would run to and fro, and in which knowledge would be increased. As you know, it has been within the lifetime of this present generation that people have really started running to and fro. We're now a world of travelers because suddenly there's come an unprecedented increase of knowledge, which has made possible the invention of new modes of travel, just as the prophet predicted. As far back as the 18th century, Sir Isaac Newton studied this prophecy and concluded that the time would come when people would travel as fast as 50 miles an hour. As we all know, Newton's forecast has been more than fulfilled.
Yes. I know that we are inclined to forget that all of our wonderful blessings of invention and travel are really peculiar to our own generation. Our grandfathers knew little or nothing about them. I have read that in the early days of railroading, many otherwise intelligent persons claimed that the railroads were inventions of the devil.
And, Russell, it is this foretold increase of knowledge and the running to and fro on earth that have had so much to do with worldwide troubles of our day, such as wars and revolutions. The prophet Daniel describes this as a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, and indicates that it marks the time when we can expect the establishment of the kingdom of Christ.
But, Ed, what about the end of the world in connection with the time of the end?
Well, the word world is used in the Bible much the same way we often use it today, meaning not the earth, but the associations of people on the earth, or in other words, a social order. Several worlds or ages are mentioned in the Bible. We're told, for example, of a world that came to an end at the time of the flood.
Yes, but the earth did not come to an end at the time of the flood, did it?
No, of course not. And according to the scriptures, the earth will never come to an end. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 4, the prophet tells us that the earth abideth forever. The social order that existed before the flood came to an end at that time. However, and then a new social order began. That world is now coming to an end, or social order, I mean, is ending.
Then you think that human ingenuity will be able to develop plans for a new social order of peace and happiness right here on the earth?
Indeed, I don't, Russell. The Bible reveals that the new world is to be established by Christ and not by man. Thus we see, Russell, that the prophetic end of the world does not denote the end of time or the destruction of the earth, but merely the end of what the Bible describes as this present evil world, preparatory to the establishment of God's new world, otherwise described in the Scriptures as the kingdom of Christ.
But what does the Bible mean when it refers to the last days?
The expression last days is descriptive of the closing days of the reign of sin and death. Then will begin the period in which a new and better social order will be established under the direct administration of Christ. I think it might be well, Russell, for you to read a part of the prophet Micah's description of the last days. You'll find it in chapter 4. Read verses 1 through 4.
Very well. I have it right here, and I shall read. But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and the people shall flow unto it. And many nations shall come and say, Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths, for the law shall go forth from Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among many people, and rebuke strong nations afar off, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. That is a long reading, and it does contain several things that are interesting.
Russell, it's heartwarming, isn't it? Now, isn't it a wonderful description of the last days? Certainly it doesn't indicate that the last days mean the end of everything, does it?
I should say not. But here's another question, nevertheless. In this prophecy of the last days, it speaks of the mountain of the house of the Lord. Now, that's a peculiar expression. What does it mean?
Well, the Bible uses the term mountain to symbolize a kingdom or government. The mountain of the house of the Lord would therefore be the kingdom or government made up of the ruling house of the Lord, consisting of his beloved son, King Jesus, and his footstep followers called from the world during the gospel age and found worthy to live and reign with him.
Then you do not believe one should be fearful of anything that the future holds for man.
Oh, indeed, just the opposite, Russell. There is much fear in the world today on account of threat and destruction by nuclear warfare, earthquakes, revolutions, and so on. But the Bible assures us that the Lord created this earth not in vain, but to be inhabited. Jesus said in one of the Beatitudes, Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And that is really what the future holds.
That's an interesting promise, Ed. But doesn't the Bible speak of the world being burned up with fire? How is this to be understood?
Well, as I've said many times before, the Lord uses pictorial language. And fire is used in the Bible simply as a symbol of destruction, that is, of various disturbances and upheavals, which ultimately cause a social order to disintegrate and pass away. The world is on fire is often used today by writers and philosophers, and we have no difficulty in understanding what they mean, but Russell, these points are all discussed thoroughly in the little book, God and Reason. Will you tell our listeners how everybody can get a free copy of God and Reason?
Yes, I will. Friends, this little book, God and Reason, is what you have long been waiting for. That is a brief, up-to-the-minute, and easy-to-read presentation of the divine purpose in the creation of man and the manner in which throughout the ages that purpose is being fulfilled. God and Reason deals, briefly, with the Genesis account of creation and the fall of man. It discusses the divine penalty for sin. God and Reason also discusses such subjects as the end of the world, the last days, and the time of the end. It calls attention to many wonderful prophecies of the Bible which are being fulfilled in our day. God and Reason deals with these and many other important points of biblical truth in a thought-provoking manner and in the spirit of tolerance and goodwill. So send for God and Reason today. Simply address a card or a letter to Frank and Ernest, Box 60, General Post Office, New York City. May I repeat, to get your copy of God and Reason, send your request to Frank and Ernest, Box 60, General Post Office, New York City. It will be mailed to you free, and there is no obligation.
Send for your free booklet today. Mail your request to Frank and Ernest, Post Office Box 60, New York, New York, 10116. This program is brought to you by the Dawn Bible Students Association in cooperation with local Bible study groups and the Friends of Frank and Ernest everywhere. To repeat, mail your request to Frank and Ernest, Post Office Box 60, New York, New York, 10116. Ask your friends to listen, won't you please? And now, goodbye, and may God bless you.